Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Coca-Cola, Barranquilla, Amsterdam, I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bear, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumbo Justice radio show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find them. It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumbo Justice radio show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumbo Justice radio show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumbo Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio and the Jumbo Justice radio show. Audrey had to say that twice tonight. I'm not sure why. But we thank you, Audrey, for being here and introducing the show, as always. And I want to thank Johnny Cash one more time. Indeed, he's been everywhere. If you count the number of places in that song, it's over 90 cities. In state. And I want to thank Emily Kensington. She's here tonight. And also Mike Steele for their assistance in helping prepare the show. Tonight's going to be a very special show, a topic that I think is something that is exciting for everyone and important for everyone in the United States and every city and county that we live in. We're experiencing a little bit of difficulty across the country, and that might be an understatement, in recruiting and selecting police officers. And we have tonight Detective Raymond Milburn from the Dallas, Texas Police Recruiting Team. And I might add that this is the department that probably wrote the book on how to recruit nationwide in order to find the absolute best people. So we're looking forward to that tonight, to hear those folks talk about what they do in Dallas. And I know they just passed through this area. I think they were up in Detroit, Michigan, and Wayne County. Came down to some places in Ohio and back to Dallas. The purpose of our show is the same as it always is. It's to discuss the news, issues, and events and developments and the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And our show is dedicated to the tireless police and court, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. And we think what we do with the show is a little unique. We do inside criminal justice technical kinds of issues. So may not have a wide audience in terms of the general public, although these topics are of interest to them. But inside the criminal justice field, we think these are topics that people want to know something about. Let me tell you a little bit about the magic of Blog Talk Radio. It indeed is leading-edge technology. If you just think a few years ago what you had to do to broadcast on a radio station or to broadcast even on the Internet, and I tried it back in the 1990s, you were limited to about 50 listeners, and it didn't work right to start with. But the genius of all this is Alan Levy. He's the CEO of Blog Talk Radio, and he's up now over 2,000, perhaps 2,500 different radio shows. So here's what's possible on Blog Talk Radio. Any person, any interest group, that can be anything from cigars to astronomy, can have their own show broadcasting live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. And guess what? It's absolutely free. So you, if you don't like this show, just like on the back of the box of Cheez-Its, it says, get your own box, you can get your own show. But think of that. Any organization, any group can actually broadcast as much as 14 hours a week. In fact, it may be more than that now to our worldwide audience. And indeed, some of our shows, we've had people call in from other countries. When we did the one on the Haitian prison system, we had callers from a number of different locations around the world. Tonight's show, as usual, we're going to start off with a little bit of my mumbling and commenting about some news stories, and they're always interesting stories in the field of criminal justice. And we'll have listener call-ins as folks feel free to call in. And we'll be talking about police officer recruiting and selection. Here's what you do as a listener or a caller. You can listen on your computer with the Windows Media Player. You can call in by phone. That can be by cell, by landline, by Skype. And you can hear the whole show on the telephone if you call in. That's the way our guests listen to the show. They generally turn their computer off or turn their sound down and do it. And the number to call in as a guest or a listener is 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And what I'm able to do is hold five callers at a time. And when I have the callers on, I can click them on my switchboard, and they can all talk to each other and talk to me. And then as others come on and others depart, we can have five at a time throughout the whole show if that need be. Let me talk a little bit about a couple news stories, and I think our guest is on here right now, and we'll get him on in just a second. In fact, I might go ahead and raise him up now and see maybe he wants to comment on one of these stories. Detective Milburn, is that you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, great. We ask this a lot on Blog Talk Radio. How do you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Oh, that's great. Well, we appreciate your stopping by tonight, and we're certainly looking forward to your commentary about the Dallas police recruiting. I want to start off here tonight a little bit with a story. Did you ever have an argument or a complaint about the Postal Service in the United States? I never really have, but I hear people say that all the time, and I've had postal inspectors as students at both the graduate and undergraduate level. Times a letter is missing, right? Have you heard about the guy down in Ciudad Juarez, who the postman, they caught him, and they found 10 tons of undelivered letters in his house. Is that incredible? 10 tons. It was 1,100 bags filled with letters dating back to 1999. Of course, the idea was he was going to scan through these letters and see if he can find any money. I suppose he found some. If he didn't, he certainly was a persistent guy. But the Mexican Postal Service promised now that they are going to deliver these 10 tons of letters. But that's kind of an incredible story. I can't imagine that. How are your prisons doing there in Texas, Detective Milburn? Are you pretty full?
Oh, we have quite a few in there now. In fact, I just heard that Dallas is trying to figure out what they're going to do with their county jail because they're about at capacity.
Oh, they're up to capacity. Well, in one way, that's good. In other ways, it's bad, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
There's one thing that we know that's hardly debatable is it's very difficult to commit your crime from a jail cell, although some do, depending on their crime. But there's an interesting story out of Boston. This guy's case has been going on for about since 2003, and he's a convicted killer, and he's had a religious conversion, and since 2003 he's been preaching to a congregation of inmates, and a new warden came in no, prior to 2003, excuse me, a new warden came in 2003, and the warden stopped it. He said it was dangerous to give an inmate that type of audience in a position of authority. And the attorney for Mr. Spratt said that, you know, his preaching was always supervised, and he never incited any inmates or posed any type of security problem. But I guess as an inmate, you could be doing worse things, right?
I'm sure you could.
It'll be interesting to see on his appeal how this particular case turns out. I'm going to talk about one more story because it's the nation is close to my heart, and then we'll go ahead and get into the Dallas police recruiting process and recruiting in general. But I've been to Romania a lot, I think 19 or 20 different times. We had a grant for about 4 years where we helped USAID in democratizing Romania's justice system. We taught classes over there and set up a master's program in criminal justice, community justice administration is what they called it. But Bill Gates goes to Romania a lot. I don't know if you know that. And when he goes over there, once a year, I've seen this in the U.S. Embassy newsletter, he picks up about 75% of his new programmers for Microsoft. They're Romanians. And Romania, of course, is just about on top of the world in terms of IT and programming, and I think the largest defrauding of a bank yet is some, don't quote me on this one, but at one time it was, some Romanian kid who was in a cyber cafe, and over a matter of weeks and months, he took millions of dollars out of a New York bank. But anyway, what happened is the president of Romania, President Petrescu, he's going to present Bill Gates with the highest medal that the nation gives. It's the Star of Romania, normally reserved for their combat veterans and things of that nature. So while he's making the speech presenting this to Bill Gates, the president starts talking about the value of software piracy. Romania sort of led the world in stealing software in the 1980s and 1990s, and the president was saying how wonderful this was, that this allowed the Romanians to develop their expertise in IT areas, and they said that Bill Gates just sort of stood there and never commented about that. He wasn't going to condone software piracy. So it's been all over the Romanian press. Folks are thinking that perhaps this time the president, who's a wonderful guy and liked by all sides, maybe embarrassed them around the world by making that particular comment. But you can see that if you ever visit the country, it's a wonderful place, and you probably know Mark Stallow there in the Dallas Police Department. He's gone over with us a couple of times, or more than that perhaps, to teach him crime analysis skills. Let's get into police recruiting and selection. And do you mind if I call you Raymond?
No, sir, that's just fine.
Okay. Raymond, tell us a little bit about your background and your experiences there with the Dallas Police.
Well, I've been on the police department for a little over 16 years. I was older when I started. I was 30 when I came over to the police department, and I was a union electrician for about 10 years. I'd served in the Navy prior to that, and because of the construction in Dallas in the late 70s, early 90s, I got laid off, and I would travel, and I had a wife, and I had two small children at the time, and started looking for something that would give me some more stability and allow me to stay at the house a little more. And just like we're doing now, they had an ad in the newspaper, and I guess it was probably May or June of 1990, and I saw the ad, and I met the qualifications. Never really thought about a career in law enforcement at that time. And 16 years later, it's probably the best move I ever made in my life. So I can speak real highly of the department.
That's just great. And certainly the reputation of the Dallas Police, not only in the United States but worldwide, is just outstanding. And my experience is there, living in Texas for 5 years, I had really good relations with your department there, and I was so impressed with the work that your officers do. And it's not an easy city to police, is it?
No, it's not. We go through, we have a lot of officers. We have probably close to 3,000 officers now. We're slotted to have, I think, in the neighborhood of 3,200. So we recruit all the time, and we have a lot of incentives, and we have a We have a lot of good things, a lot of reasons for people to join the department. Number one is, like I said before, is you're not going to have to worry about getting laid off. We have enough stuff to keep us busy. So the things that I found and that I liked was that it gave me that stability. I wasn't going to have to worry about an IT type job or something that was going to be gone tomorrow. And I could do some planning. Has a lot of versatility as far as moving around the department. We have a lot of different areas that interest people. We have a white collar crime. We have, of course, we have the SWAT team. You were talking about Officer Stallo, K-9, the horses. Just a lot of variances that basically there's something for everybody.
And there's. Like you said, there's always a place to go to work, and I grew up in a contractor's family, too, so I understand feast and famine.
Correct.
Depending how the work goes, right?
Right. And so by joining the department, it enabled me, when I first came over, and we have some people now, we have recently, probably about a year ago, we and I'm going to go over our qualifications here if I get a chance to. We started taking the military personnel in lieu of college. Typically, we have a 45 college hours for an individual that's 21 years old, and if they're 19 and a half, we require 60 college hours. And we were finding that a lot of our military guys were getting out after doing their 4 years, and they didn't have the opportunity at that time to go to college. So we changed our rules, and we now allow military personnel that have 4 years active duty with an honorable discharge will waive the college hours. So that's increased our numbers and has really given us a good group of people to select from.
You know, one of the things that you see once in a while, more than once in a while, in the police recruiting and selection literature is the concern about maturity of applicants nowadays. It seems like, you know, we're taking a little bit longer to grow up. I'm not exactly sure what the reason for that is, but when you get the folks from the military, they're, you know, you grow up fast, and particularly if you've been in combat, and these guys and women are coming back from Iraq, they've certainly had an experience, I'm sure.
Well, I'd like to take just a minute and first of all thank all of our military personnel that allow you and I to speak on the telephone tonight. So a big hand goes out to those guys, and I was happy to see that the department changed that rule to allow those people to apply, because like you say, they do come in, they do have the discipline, they have the military bearing, and it's an easy transition for a lot of them.
And when they show up in the Dallas Police Department, they're going to find out that degrees are everywhere anyway, so they're probably going to go to college through their GI allotment or the Dallas Police Incentive or something like that. Does your agency, I think you provide some type of educational incentive anyway, don't you?
We have a tuition reimbursement that just started back again, and we've had officers that have gone on. We've had a couple, not a whole lot of them. We've had a couple go as far as to get their law degree while working on the department. You know, it's a 24-hour job. So a lot of them will work either that evening shift or that late night shift, and they'll go to college during the day, or if they're working during the day, they'll find a college that they can go to and get their hours during the evening time. So a lot of people will join the department once they meet that minimum requirement, and then they'll continue that education, go on and get their bachelor's. Some of them will get their master's. And like I say, we've had a few that have gone on and got their law degree. So it's very adaptable for a lot of people. They'll A lot of them will have a working spouse, and it enables them to want to work a day shift typically, and then the officer can work an evening or a late night. They don't have to have the daycare issues. They're able to be at home with their family during those times. And it's just a varied field that gives you just a wide range of times and schedules and things that you can work into.
I think I recall over the years there in the 90s, there were a couple of folks, and I think I know one now, that were working on doctorates, too, at UTD. And it's a good place to go and get some tuition reimbursement also at the same time. Raymond, what's the makeup and kind of the operations of your recruiting office? How is that set up?
We currently have 17 background investigators. We have 8 recruiters. We have three different sergeants. We have a lieutenant and we have a chief. It's pretty much the makeup of our office. Our recruiters will go out and they go all over the country. They'll recruit at colleges. They go to a lot of job fairs. We have an internet site, which is going to be DallasPolice.net, which has a lot of our information on there. And so they bring in the people once a month, and I can provide those dates. And they're also going to be on that internet site. Once a month, we have what we call on-site testing, which we've set up in order to help the people that are from out of town, where they can come in on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They start the process on Friday morning, and we'll pretty much have phase one of the testing procedures completed by that Sunday. And we're doing that this weekend, in fact. February 9th through 11th, we'll have an on-site testing. And they call, and we'll give them the parameters, qualifications for them to come and test. And that enables them where they don't have to miss as much work. They can come in, get it done in those 3 days, and then typically if you pass all three of those phases, you'll come in, you'll do your preliminary questionnaire. Then you'll follow that up with doing a pre-polygraph booklet. We'll do the PT test. They'll take the polygraph, and they'll do their oral board. And at the end, if they pass that oral board, they'll know when they leave that their background is going to go to a background investigator. Takes us approximately 6 weeks from the time we get it to complete a background, and then we'll put them into the end of the next academy class. We do what we call pre-hiring for people to get finished. If there's, say, 2, 3, 4 weeks before an academy class starts, we'll hire them as what we call a pre-hire, where they'll work here in the office at the regular rate of pay that they would get if they were in the academy. Enables them to come down here and go ahead and get started.
That is just great. What is involved, as much as you can say, what's involved for the folks who would be listening in the background investigation? It takes 6 weeks. What actually happens?
It takes 6 weeks. What happens is we get your preliminary and your application, your pre-polygraph book, and we get all that documentation. We go over to do a search as far as check the community where you live, ensure that you don't have any outstanding citations, or find out about any activity that you've had with any other law enforcement agency. If you've applied at some other agencies, we're going to talk to those. And we talk to your references on your application. You're going to list several references. We're going to contact those. Verify your college, verify your high school grades, and that's pretty much going to be what we do, is just basically make sure that everything that you've told us on there is going to be correct.
What are some of the surprises you've come up with over the years?
Well, we have some that'll tell you that they have, you know, 2 or 3 citations, and you'll find out that they've had 15 to 18. You know, and understanding that, of course, some of those are going to be people who are older, who have been out there. We had one gentleman that forged his college transcripts, things of that nature.
Well, that's something. It's probably not an easy assignment to be in this unit, is it? I mean, it sounds like weekends and...
Well, with looking at hiring the numbers, and our goal for this year is to hire 350 officers, which is a large number of officers. We hired 218, I believe, last year. This year they set the goal at 350. Of that 350, we've hired 93. So we still have about 257 to go. And like I said, or as you said, we went to Michigan. We just completed an on-site testing there. And what happened there was we were finding that in Michigan we had several people that were in our academy. And in talking to the directors of the academies and other law enforcement personnel in those cities, that a lot of these, I call them kids, just because I'm older, but a lot of these young people were getting their associate's degree in criminal justice and completed an academy. And then we would find on our applications that they've applied at 15, 18, 20 different agencies in and around the Michigan area. And when we would talk to the people at those agencies, we were finding out that they were looking for people that had 3 to 5 years experience. And there's just no jobs for them. So we did some advertising, and three of us went up there in January, and we advertised our location, happened to be at a hotel in Southfield, Michigan, and we had 82 people show up, which was an outstanding number of people. And we decided then that because of the cost of all those people coming down to Texas to do that preliminary, that first phase of the testing, that we would take a testing team and go to Michigan where they didn't have to fly down twice, because typically you'll fly down at the beginning and you'll do that initial testing, that 3 days testing, and then if you make it through the background portion of the investigation, then you come back down and you do phase two, which is a final review board, a psychological test, and a medical test. So they would have to fly down twice. So trying to help them on understanding they just finished college, a lot of them had paid for their academy. We talked to the people at Wayne County Regional Academy. We used their testing. We used their facilities. Brought our testing unit up there. It consisted of about 17 individuals. And we did all of our testing up there, the same that we would have done down here, only we did it there. So now those people will come to background, and if they make it through the background portion of it, then they'll have to fly down here, but they'll only have to fly down once instead of twice. So we're hoping that we save them some money, and at the same time we'll get us some good recruits out of it.
Well, you must get a lot of gratitude out of that from the applicants. I mean, are there many people doing that, many agencies?
Well, as far as I know there's other agencies that do recruiting all over. I don't know if they're doing their own on-site testing on location or not. We've done that one, and we'll probably do one or two more. We had some people up in the Toledo, Ohio area, and we're hoping that if we get the word out enough that we get a good reception up there, and we can get those kind of numbers like we got in Michigan, that we can come up there and do the testing there.
Can I assume that when you're looking for the really outstanding applicants like you are, this is very competitive now?
Very competitive. There's a lot of agencies out there that are looking to hire, and understanding with Dallas being a larger city, our numbers may be bigger than some of them, but there's a lot of agencies all over the country that are looking for, you know, the good applicants, and so we have to go after them.
I sort of browse through officer.com once in a while, and also policeemployment.com, and then Police Beat magazine, which I suppose you see once in a while, and boy, the jobs, there are just lots of men in there, aren't there?
Oh, yes. You'll see ads for all of them. In fact, our agency recently went to a bonus. We our starting pay is $41,690, and if you have a bachelor's degree, we give us another $100 a month, which moves you to $42,890. And in addition to that, that's a starting salary. That's for personnel that's going to be starting the academy. Then we have a $10,000 bonus on top of that. That upon completion of the academy, and our academy is 32 weeks long, you get $6,000, and then when you complete your field training, which is about another 24 weeks of field training plus about a 3 or 4 month probationary period, you get the additional $4,000. So you get the $10,000 in approximately 18 months on top of your salary.
Some folks are surprised when they come out of a college degree program or even otherwise, and they show up on police academy, and it's a new version of study, isn't it? I mean, it's not everyone.
It's very demanding. They of course, they have the academic side of it, and they also have the physical fitness side, the driving, firearms qualifications. So there's a lot of things that a lot of people in a college wouldn't have considered. So a lot of them, when they come out, they find out it's very demanding. Ours is, like I say, 32 weeks. It's Monday through Friday, typically 8 to 5. Every now and then you'll have to go in at nighttime for your night qualifications. Let you see how things look different at night than they do during the day. So we typically don't want them to be in college whenever they start the academy.
That's 8 said something. Wow. And people that are outside of law enforcement really have no idea that the variety of topics that police officers study in that academy and the amount of study that's required just to pass. I mean, everybody doesn't make it, do they?
No. Now we're pretty fortunate of the ones that after they make it through our hiring process, we have a fairly high success rate at the academy. I think the last class started with 50, and I believe they still have, and they won't graduate for another, probably 10 or 12 weeks. And I don't think they've lost but maybe 3 or 4.
How those academy classes break down diversity-wise? So pretty well across male, female, various ethnic races? And
We shoot for that. That's our goal, is to have our classes be very diverse. It just depends. Sometimes you'll have a class that may be made up of a third females. I can't recall. And I don't have the numbers in front of me of the last class as far as the diversity went. But I know there was 25% were military that they qualified under the military, but I don't know the numbers exactly.
But you've had lots of women officers and high-ranking officers there for years.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
My lieutenant is a female.
And then, you look across the country, and I think these are good models for women nowadays that might be a little hesitant about that to look at, because you got so many major city police chiefs now that are women. So.
And we have several female chiefs on our department. I don't know the exact number. In fact, Sergeant Denemy just gave me the recruit class. The last class that was started, it was 58% white males, 4% white females, 15% black males, 4% black females, 7% Hispanic males, 4% Hispanic females. We had one Asian male and one looks probably going to be Middle Easterner.
Mm-hmm.
I believe is going to be the other category. Military exemptions were 26%. I was off by one, and overall the class had 13% females.
When's your next academy class going to start?
Our next academy class is going to start on March the 7th.
Okay, pretty soon.
Huh? And our goal is to get 50 people in that class.
When you line up all these qualifications and you look at the steps through the selection process, which ones are there several that are the most troubling for the applicants today?
Well, and we lose them at various steps throughout the hiring process. Our PT is fairly new. Our physical qualification is fairly new, and we're not losing quite as many there. It consists of a vertical jump. They do sit-ups for a minute. They do a 300-meter run. Then they do push-ups for a minute, and then they do a mile-and-a-half run. And we lose people at various steps along the way. Some will struggle with the PT. If they don't pass the PT the first time, they can come back in 30 days and try it again. Kind of lets them know where they're at. If they were close, they know they need to work on their running or their push-ups, depending on their upper body strength. And I don't know if there's any one category that we lose the majority of them. I think it's just varied as we go.
You used to have the pull-up requirement.
Right. Now that test has changed, and we've gone to more of a Cooper test. When I tested, you had to do the pull-ups. It was the pull-ups. It was the grip strength, the setups, and then you would run on the treadmill. And depending on how you did, and it was kind of a pass-fail. And if you did less pull-ups, you had to run longer on the treadmill. And they've gotten away from that, and they've gone more with a Cooper test. And a lot of the agencies are starting to use that as their entry-level exam.
Yeah, the Cooper Institute certainly made its impact across America.
Yes, it has.
We had, I don't know if you know, in a former life, I was the director of the Peace Officer Commission here in Ohio. And Ohio has maybe 112, 116 academies at that time, police academies. You could almost walk out your door anywhere and go to a police academy in Ohio. 16 of them were in colleges and universities. And when I was the director, our commission didn't want to have mandatory physical fitness. As of about 2 years ago, I think they've now changed that. Now, all academies did, but it wasn't the kind of thing that you could, you know, you could flunk out for. And but, you know, my view about that has always been if you get somebody that's kind of, you know, reasonably healthy and structurally sound, you're going to have them for 8 months in the academy. If they're willing, then you can just about, you know, graduate them at any fitness level you want, you know.
Right, and that's ours. And our numbers are figured, I don't know at what percentage of the Cooper test you have to be able to do on the entry. But then as you progress to the academy, of course, you're expected to see improvement as you go through.
And when you finish, you're taking your recruits, I mean your graduates, do they take a state licensing exam?
Yes, they'll take a state licensing exam. It's a TCLEOS test for us. And they'll get their basic peace officer's license while they're in the academy. And that's pretty much taken up in about the first half of the academy. And then the second half of the academy is more of your municipal and city ordinances and things of that nature, the things that the Dallas Police Department does itself. So they're going to take, I believe it's either 40 or 80 hours of Spanish during the course of the academy.
Very important in Dallas, I'm sure, right?
Right, because we do have such a large Hispanic population. They'll take that, and it's just basic Spanish. Now, I grew up in El Paso, Texas, so I spoke Spanish growing up. So we have that's one of our languages that we have an incentive pay, and that pays an additional $110 to $150 a month, depending on your proficiency. You take a test, and if you pass the test, then that's a monthly incentive on your pay. So they teach it because it is important to be able to speak to everybody out here, and so that 40 hours just gives them enough to where they can make people understand what it is that they need them to do.
Sure, the residents who speak Spanish appreciate that.
Yes, they do. Let's see. Oh, they just gave me another list of out-of-state trips. They're going to be going to Mobile, Alabama.
Oh, wow.
Mississippi Valley State, Huntsville, Alabama. I'm looking for something here close to you, Professor. Let's see, Kansas State. Oh, here we go. Dayton, Ohio. They got a big job fair in Dayton, Ohio, which is going to be on February 23rd. The Dallas Police Department will be there for that. And then we have a couple guys that are going to Minnesota on the 26th, 28th of this month. So that's just to give you a little breakdown of some of the things that we're trying to do and some of the places that we go. I know we have a couple people going to Louisiana this coming up week. They have a job fair down there. We go all over.
Is the February 23rd meeting in Dayton, is that at the University of Dayton? I think I heard that.
Is that the University of Dayton?
Or is it Sinclair Community College, maybe?
They said it's going to be a consortium of about 17 schools, and I don't know what campus it's going to be held on. I can find out and get you that information, though.
I think that's the Ohio Criminal Justice Education, if I'm not mistaken. And I think I heard it's at the University of Dayton, but I...
Okay.
Well, boy, you should do well from that area, because that's...
Well, that's what we're hoping for. We're hoping University of Dayton, you're correct. And that'll be on February 23rd. The Dallas Police Department will be there. I was going to tell you, what else did I have here that I wanted to let you know while we're on it? I told you our salaries. Told you some of our incentives. They start with their benefits start from day one. Health insurance and life insurance. We have an outstanding retirement, which is something that
could you comment on that?
Yes. Our retirement is set on either 20 years or age 50,
okay.
and it's based on at age 50 it's 3% per year. So using myself as one of the older people that went through the academy when I was 30, I get my 20 and my 50 hit on the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So if I retire at age 50, I'll be eligible for 60% of my salary at that time. So when I go to a college and talk to kids, I tell them that there was a guy in our class. Actually, we had three people that were 20 years old at the time when they started the academy. So when they retire at age 50, they'll have 30 years, and their retirement will be 90% of the three best years. They take your three best years, get an average, and then you would get 90% of that.
90%?
90%.
Wow. I don't think it's important to get that one up front, isn't it?
Right. So if they can understand that coming in young, while you tell a young person that's 20, 21 years old about retiring at age 50, they look at you like you lost your mind. I mean, that's 50 is just so far down the road for them to think about. But if you could show them the numbers and you show them that 60% that I'm going to get, and you show them the same salary at 90%, we have what we call a drop, which is a deferred account where you actually retire, but you stay working. And now your retirement money goes into an account that draws anywhere. I think right now it's drawing about 9.25%. You know, so that same person now putting 90% as compared to that 60, that money in turn grows that much quicker. And
when I was there in the 1990s, I was there from 91 or 92 to 97. I think there were some police lieutenants there that had retired and kept working, and they were making several of them were making more money than the chief. Was that right?
Oh, very easy for them to do. We have several people on the police and the fire department, both that are people that have retired and have stayed in the drop account and have close to $1 million in their drop account.
Isn't that incredible?
You know, I worked with a sergeant that's still on the department that was a rookie when Kennedy was assassinated in 1963.
Is that right?
And he's still here today, and he's still a sergeant, and he still works late nights. So apparently he thinks it's a pretty good deal.
He would be an excellent subject for an oral history, wouldn't he?
Yes, he would.
About the history of the police department. I'm always fond of doing oral histories or getting students to do those. It's not an easy method to do. You got to spend about two trips and about 4 hours with people, but they usually come out very well. And
well, we don't reuse badge numbers here, and his badge number is 1851, I'm sorry. He's 1851, and I want to say the last recruit class, one of them had over a 9,000 badge number. So there's that many people been hired since 1963.
Well, he can kind of strut around with that one, can't he?
Yes, he can. He's got the lowest badge number on the department, most senior guy.
When you're out recruiting at these job fairs or places like that, who are the people that you keep running into? Or does it just depend on the part of the country?
Depends on the part of the country. Some people don't travel as far as we do. And you'll see, you know, if you're in Texas, you'll see typically you're going to see the Texas Department of Public Safety, which is our state police. You're going to see them. Sometimes you'll see the counties that are surrounding where the job fair is going to be. Our recruiters try to go to all the colleges, try to get in and talk to the criminal justice classes. Then they'll try to, like when we were in Michigan, we did our hotel interviews on one day. Then the following day we went to probably six other colleges, and then we had a job fair at Michigan State. So when you put all those together and you're getting your information put out, it allowed us to have the kind of numbers that we had.
Well, Michigan State should have gotten you a good crowd, I would think, wouldn't it?
Michigan State, we did well. You know, and some schools are going to have a larger criminal justice department. Now, we don't go just for the criminal justice students. Ours is the 45 college hours. Our only requirement of those is they can't include any developmental classes. But other than that, the 45 college hours can be in any field. We're not limited to just the criminal justice. And when you look at our department and you look at the people that have degrees, we got them anywhere from communications majors to art majors to just about everything. Some of them didn't even think about a career in law enforcement until they ended up at a job fair and saw the salaries, and saw the diversity that we have as far as our job skills, and you know, so there's no one group that we're after.
What do you think people come into the people that you meet at the fairs that haven't thought about and haven't studied criminal justice and really been concerned about a law enforcement career. What do you think their impression is of policing when they sort of first show up? I guess they're interested enough to show up at a job fair, but I've talked to students like that at job fairs who are business majors and things like that, and sometimes I'm astounded about how little they know policing.
And that's a lot of it, and a lot of them, you know, they have a small conception of what we actually do. And when you start talking to them about the different areas that police work has gotten into, some of them that are computer majors won't realize that we have people that are very proficient in computers and use those in their investigation. You know, but and a lot of them haven't thought about it, and they'll ask questions as far as, you know, what a patrol officer, which is where everybody starts, you know, what an 8-hour day consists of for a patrol officer. We'll explain that to them. You know, that depending on where you're at and what you're doing, you know, one good thing about our job is every day is different.
Exactly.
It's not a boring job.
There's a writer in our field that hasn't always been complimentary of the police, but he's from Berkeley, Jerome Skolnick. He wrote the book Justice Without Trial. And in his updated version of that book, he said that law enforcement, he called police officers, he's being complimentary, he called police officers asphalt cowboys, and he said that it may be the last great adventurous job in the United States. You know, everything else is sort of shut down, and what better job do you have where you work by yourself, you make important decisions, nobody's looking over your shoulder every second, and regardless of what people say, year after year, these surveys that we've been doing for about 30 years show that most people like the police.
I was going to say, I think that, you know, you're going to have those, of course, that don't like you, and I think overall, when you talk to people, most of them have a favorable impression of police officers and police work. You know, and I think a lot of them, if those that don't necessarily like you right off the bat, once they realize that the job that you do day in and day out, you get to see some big changes in people's lives. You get to realize that you've impacted some neighborhoods, individuals and whole neighborhoods. So I think overall we're looked upon favorably.
Even in even a city as large as Dallas, that probably has its share of criminals, but managed well by your police department, you know, most of the job is service and public order type of things, isn't it?
It's not a lot of it, probably more than any of it.
Yep. And people that come on with that type of motivation, I can remember years ago, some police agencies actually going out and systematically trying to recruit social workers. And a couple of them are successful. One was in North Carolina, I think, in Winston-Salem. And there was a sheriff out in Colorado that used to look for social workers. What he was looking for were people that had the desire to help others. And that's certainly not a bad one. You'll certainly have your chance to do that in police work, right?
Right. And I think that's one of the reasons. Again, like the military, you know, that they join to serve, and this is just another aspect of it for them. Allows them to do basically what they wanted to do before, just in a different capacity.
You know, I was going to ask you, and I don't want to do anything to steal recruits away from yourself, but have you heard about this, or maybe did you tell me about the Miami Gardens, Florida Police Department?
No, I didn't.
Heard about them?
No, I have not.
Forming a new police department. I guess it's in the Fort Lauderdale area. And they're going to hire something like 150 officers, but on their webpage, it's Miami Gardens, Florida Police Department. They are offering they must have read your literature. They're offering a $12,000 signing bonus, a $7,000 moving expense, and a $5,000 down payment on a house.
Hmm.
I would.
That's not good. Let's not mention that anymore.
Delete.
Right. You know, and like I say, I think you're going to see that the departments are coming up with ideas and ways to try to increase the number of recruits that they have coming in. You know, hopefully I think ours is we do have the $10,000 bonus. We just restructured how you get promoted. It started off, you had to wait every 2 years before you'd get a raise or get what we call a step increase, and we've shortened that to every year now. And so we're finding that your salary increases at a quicker rate, and you top out a lot quicker. So between that, the bonus, the educational incentives, the language incentives, we have an incentive for those that decide to stay in patrol. If you stay in patrol for 6 years, you get an extra $100 a month. If you stay in there for 8 years, you get $125. If you stay in for 10, you get $150 as an incentive to keep people in patrol.
Patrol officer idea then.
Right. And so you know, the different shift differential pay, if you work on the evening shift, which is predominantly from, say, 6 p.m. to midnight, you're going to make 3.5%. If you work the graveyard or the late night shift, that's 6.5% incentive for working that shift. So, you know, when you get the different incentives, it's a good deal.
And counting on this police department, you're entering a department that technologically is as sophisticated as you can get, just about, isn't it?
Oh yes, all the time updating our equipment, from our vehicles, from the MDTs, the mobile data terminals that are in the vehicles are updated.
You've had in-car computers. That was, how far back?
Oh, I don't know. They were in there when I got here in 1990, so I don't know when they started with those.
Yeah. So
when I got on, they were what they called a 60-line data terminal. Now they're up over 200. A lot more information on them. Allows us to get a lot of the information that we need as patrol officers a lot quicker. You can do a lot of your reports where before you had to call in a lot of your reports. Now you can do them all on the computer.
Could I ask you a question about something that's a little off, but it's something that might attract people since the nation is sort of caught up with this. In fact, we're going to do a radio show on the police surveillance camera business. And, you know, depending where you are, Chicago probably is the biggest example in the United States, and Baltimore, New York, and some of the places, they're spending so much money on these surveillance cameras. Is that something that Dallas is tinkering with or is installed or what?
As far as in your vehicles?
No, on the streets, the surveillance cameras on the streets.
Oh, I don't know how many we have. I know that they're wanting to get them in like our high traffic areas, like our, we have what we call a West End, which is a lot of restaurants, stuff for tourists to go to, our higher concentrated crowd type areas. They're trying to get those for that reason.
Sometimes I make a little joke about it because, you know, we're deploying them. Some of these cities have literally thousands now. And at Baltimore, that said they had only used it in a prosecution like twice. But I think Chicago's got them now where you can actually track an offender running or from your computer in the car that they can, you know, toggle and switch to cameras that will actually watch this person running. And then Great Britain has them that talks to you now.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you throw your cigarette down in the wrong place, the monitors will very politely tell you, please pick up your cigarette, sir, or get off your bicycle if you're in an area. I thought the next development, what do you think, Raymond, is maybe add a taser to one.
Yeah, that way they don't even have to have us out there, huh? They just take care of it.
Right. But anyway, it's something that, you know, Britain sort of wrote the book, or Great Britain wrote the book on that. I forget how many millions of cameras they have now, but the average Brit now, it's up to, they get photographed about 500 times a day. And, you know, they're
whether they want to or not.
Yeah, whether they want to or not. But I see Milwaukee is planning on, is thinking about putting them in bars, where if you get up with and you're a little bit tipsy and you head for your car, they'll know about it.
The camera will catch you and they'll know you're intoxicated before you even get to your car.
Yeah. Now, that would be a good point for the taser, right, before you get out the
door. See, there you go. Just go ahead and stop them right there. Professor Haley, I don't know exactly what time it is that you're going to take me off of the air, but before I go, I'd like to give out our phone number and our internet site one more time.
Okay, please do that.
Our Our phone number is going to be 1-800-527-2948, and our website is dallaspolice.net. And, again, there's a lot of information as far as our qualifications, our testing procedures. They can call that 800 number, and they can talk to a recruiter Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Again, we're going to be in Dayton, Ohio, on the 23rd for that job fair. So if there's people in that area and we can generate a high interest, and we can get a good number of people interested, then we would look at possibly coming up there and doing that on-site testing in that area.
I will make announcements about that and try to get some folks down there for you. So
tell them we're hiring. Like I said, we need about 257 more. So people are looking for work. They want to come down here. Now, when I was in Michigan, it was -3 when I left. I landed in Dallas, it was 64. If we don't have enough financial incentives, we should have some good weather incentives to get you down here.
Yes, I have.
That was another reason for coming in the wintertime, see?
I have a doctor friend who always tells me about his convertible top down.
See? I bet you're not driving in Ohio with a convertible top down right now.
Oh, it's been zero for about a week, so it's terrible. So, well, look, Raymond, we want to thank you very much and thank the sergeant there also for assisting tonight. And this has been a marvelous talk and something, you know, it's archived. So if you folks want to use it somehow, and I'll probably use it in class, either graduate or undergraduate, to help people understand what goes on in this recruiting process. And we thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Well, if there's anything I can do to help you, you have my number. Feel free to give me a call. And when they talk to the class, if they have some questions, feel free to give that number out also.
I will certainly do that.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, and good night.
Professor Haley, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Good night. Well, folks, I see Audrey over there signaling that it's time to close down the show. Keep looking on the website for upcoming shows. We're going to be doing one. We're going to do a blockbuster show kind of on surveillance cameras. We've got some people, half the crew lined up, and then we're going to be doing one on prison wardens. And I've always said that may be the last job in America where you're still in charge. But people tell me it's not quite that good as it used to be. But warden is certainly an interesting position. So we'll say goodnight. Be careful and keep on learning, and we'll talk with you later.
Again, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day, smiling through, just like you always do. Till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Meet again, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.